Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. This Saturday, the production of Mud Drowning returns to New York City. The work celebrates playwright Marie Irene Fornes. Composer Philip Glass transformed the Fornes play Drowning into a short opera, and it's paired with the play called Mud. Both are directed by Joanne Acolytis for this production. The double bill first premiered in 2019 and played in New York in early 2020 at Mabu Mines Theater, which was founded in 1970 by both Glass and Acolytis. The production is returning to Mabu Mines Theater for a limited run from September 24th to October 9th. Let's listen to a sample of the kind of music you'll hear from the production as performed by the show's musical director, Michael Ferrara. This is called What Am I Made Of? From Drowning. You'll hear more of Ferrara's music playing throughout this conversation. When Philip Glass and Joanne Acolytis joined me in the studio in March of 2020 to talk about the first New York run of this production, I started by asking about how and why they founded the Mabu Mines Theater 5 decades ago.
It came about through a kind of dissatisfaction with the mechanism of the way theater was being done and the desire for us to want to do our own work together, to control not just the aesthetic, but basically our business.
How has it evolved when you think about Mabu as a concept of what you wanted to accomplish and now what you're doing now? How has it evolved, that idea? Do you still have those same sort of feelings? Or
I think some very basic ideas began there, and as far as I can tell, they're still there. Which is that we've made a commitment to the work itself, not so much as a transaction with an audience, which of course is inevitable and it should be there. We want it to be there, but we weren't that concerned about it. If the audience liked it, they didn't like it. I think that at that time, you have to really going back 40 years or 50 years. So the idea of an experimental or theater company, there were only a handful around at that time. I remember, who did we go to visit?
Judith Malina and the Living Theater.
The Living Theater,
We hitchhiked to the south of France to see the premiere production of Frankenstein enormous outdoor amphitheater with a full moon, and I think it changed our lives because one saw the possibility of the kind of thrill of doing something new with a group, that one had the same artistic goals together.
That can be very exciting.
thrilling.
It really can be, right?
And then we hitchhiked to Berlin to see Judith Malina in Antigone.
That's right.
And we wanted to join the Living Theater, and she said no. And then we started our own theater.
Yeah, actually.
We just said, well, let's start our own theater.
They encourage us to start our own theater.
Yes, yeah.
They said, no, you really have to start your own theater. And it was a really, it was a very good idea. We were actually more prepared to do that than to actually, I don't think we, Joanne, if we had gone in with them, we wouldn't have stayed that long.
No,
we had you had too many wanted, you had too many ideas of your own.
That's right. And you did too.
Yes. We wouldn't have lasted very long. But and I think they sense up. I have to say, I think they were very kind to us. They said, go out and start your own thing. He said, this is what you should do. And by God, that is exactly what we did.
Yeah, and we were the idea was when Libro and Ruth Malachek came to Paris, and David Warlow, who's then a journalist, one of the co-founders, the idea was that we would go to London. And then when Philip and I moved back to New York, which was in the 60s, so much was happening, so much so-called intersectionality of the arts. Mm-hmm. It was very exciting, and we said, London, no, old, come to New York. It is such a hotbed of artistic activity in all the arts, and everybody knew one another.
My guests are Philip Glass and Joanne Acolytis. Let me ask you about this production that's playing down in the East Village. It is the work of Maria Irene Fornes, and Edward Albee called her America's most intuitive playwright, but she didn't quite get the recognition she deserved at the time. Philip, what do you admire, and Joanne, what do you admire about her work as a playwright?
Oh, so many things. The variety, the discovery, the freshness, the newness, the impeccable form, the language. Irene came here when she was 15. She studied with Hans Hoffmann, the painter, and I think his push and pull theory influenced her, but there's a sort of irrepressible vigor and freshness to her writing that is so thrilling to me. Mm-hmm. It's really about what I tell the actors. It's all about surprise and discovery. And you never know what's going to happen from scene to scene or play to play.
Philip, when you began to work on the music for this production, what is it that you felt you needed to contribute, to accomplish? Well, what did you want your music to help?
I had seen it first without any music. Mm. The first, in fact, the two pieces, it would be Drowning in Mud, the two that we ended up doing. Mm-hmm. I saw them without any music, and I didn't, and I was delighted when Joanne invited me to think about the music. Because it wasn't clear at all that there should be any music, but so we started with drowning, yeah, that because and we started with it's basically people are singing the whole thing, so it became a vocal piece with Mud. It doesn't have that at all. So there's some little bits of music in it, but the surprising thing is that how well they work. They work very well together, and it does show you the range of the work, mm-hmm, that she has, it's almost a shock actually by the end, don't you think?
It's a shock, but on the same time, people, the audience has been saying, and what we've been, the actors know, is that they're about the same thing, Mud and Drowning. They're, mm-hmm, about the desire of a person, and in the case of drowning, a sort of creature, a monstrous creature, for a fulfilled life, and how that desire is shattered, crushed, unfulfilled, which is the theme of most of Irene's work, often through the voice of a woman, a young woman.
When you talk to your actors, let's talk about the first. Let's talk about the first play. It's in a bit of a. The form is called a table read. Am I saying that correctly?
It's called table work.
Table work,
which is a kind of in joke. that's why it's bracketed, and it's what primarily is the beginning of the rehearsal process, where a bunch of actors sit around with coffee and a dramaturg and dig into the meaning of the show. But then I had the idea of, oh, what about a table itself?
Mm-hmm.
And we literally work around the table.
As we learn the story and as we go through the emotion.
As a kind of conceptual, scenic, acting concept.
There's also, and please correct me again if I'm wrong, sometimes the actors are using American Sign Language or portions of it or something like American Sign Language?
What we call mudras, which is a kind of my own personal ripoff from the Kathakali theater in India and also American Sign Language.
And what was the effect that you wanted with this? Why did you want to incorporate this into?
It's another layer. It's a physical sort of icon of a... It formalizes it. There's the voice, which is Philip's music. That's the voice of the actors, the voice of the design, and the voice of their bodies, and the voice of the signs that they make. So it's multi. It's one thing with, you know, as the character May talks about the... Starfish has many arms. It's like theater has many arms.
You're listening to my conversation with Joanne Acolytis and Philip Glass. We're talking about their collaboration, Mud/Drowning. But let's take a moment to hear another piece from Drowning. This is number 11, When I Met Her, performed by Michael Ferrara.
With Drowning, it's done as an opera, so that gives you gives the composer more solid ground in a certain way. And we were very fortunate, with all the performers were good for what they did, but those two fellows were singing. They weren't speaking at all, and Joanne was able to bring that together with it's not so easy to do, because the function of the director is even more important, I think, when there's singing involved.
How so? Why is it more important?
Because in a way, the question really is why do you have music at all? I mean, we go through our lives. Maybe you hear music in your head when you're talking to people, but we're not accompanied by music. But so what? How is the music? It has to be there, but not there at the same time. But Joan is very. We've done quite a few things over the years, and she's very open to the surprise, and the ease with which music can come and go. I think when people are singing, then clearly you're in a different medium. But in the first piece, Mud, it's quite different. There are little pieces of music that come and that nothing lasts very long, and nothing sounds very much like what you've heard before. So in a way, I use the music to as a form of attention, in a way. It's attending without being heard. It comes and goes very quickly. You don't even know that it's there sometimes. What do you think, Joanne? I know that we talked about it a lot. It happened over a period of 3 or 4 days. We didn't have very much time, but
yeah, music was coming in the day before the audience was.
Yeah,
there was music coming in the day before the audience was. It was like music on demand. Call him, go pick it up, get it here. Okay, Michael, so, can you read it?
I didn't explain to Joanne at all what I was trying to do, but she got the picture very quickly. It forms an alternative attention, mm-hmm. which by coming and going brings a different kind of content to the piece. I think we were successful with that. I gave it to Joanne and I said, I don't know where it goes. You tell me.
And there was a time when, Philip is very easy to work with, but I love working with him because you don't need to go into a deep sort of exegesis of the text. And so at the last minute, I needed some sort of tougher music. Hmm. And what I described to him was toothachey, headachey music, and he said okay. And then we got this couple pages of music, which is Mud toothache music.
Yeah, we call it toothache music.
I like your descriptions, toothachey, because when you hear that, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
Well, so does Philip.
Yeah. Well, that's more important.
Sometimes when we go to the theater, no matter who it is, we start thinking about something that is not on the stage. We're thinking about our own life or what we've left at home that we have that's unfinished. When you put music in it like that, there's no room for it. It almost forces you to see, in my opinion, when the music takes care of all the odds and ends, then it can make the piece more. More focused in a certain way. It's an odd thing to say, but the distraction of the music creates a focus for the audience.
Do either of you have a particular part of the play or the pocket opera that you just love after seeing it, that you just love? A moment, a line, a glance, a sound?
Well,
the last thing, line of it that Greg sings
with the second piece, the drowning, where you have people that are. One of the things I liked very much is when the main character starts dancing around the stage and says, "I'm a bat." He says, "I'm not a human being. I'm a bat." It's so unexpected, but. We didn't write that. It was written. Irene wrote it. So I mean, we had two actors who, two singers, who don't you think? I think that they became very involved with this piece. Don't you think?
They did. As do the actors, and there, it's just there's so many one-liners. Like one of my favorite lines is, "My anus is violet." Which is sort of so goofy, but also the terribly poignant lines that May says is, why can't things work out for me? Mm-hmm. What? Everything goes wrong for me. Or Greg's last line, is this why we have come to life, to love like this? And hurt like this. Those are heartbreaking lines. They bring tears to my eyes. Every rehearsal, I would weep.
That was my conversation with composer Philip Glass and director Joanne Acolytis about their double bill collaboration, Mud Drowning, which first premiered at Mabu Mines Theater in 2020 and is now showing again at the theater from September 24th through October 9th. And that is all of it for today. On tomorrow's show, Little Amal's a tall girl with a big agenda. She's a 12-foot puppet representing a Syrian refugee looking for her mother, and she's making her way through New York City right now. We'll explain who she is and how people are reacting to her. And we'll get ready for the holidays. We'll talk with the author of the Modern Jewish Comfort Food Cookbook. I'm Allison Stewart. I appreciate you listening, and I appreciate you. I will meet you back here next time.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.